Hey guys, this is Colin from Blackjack Apprenticeship, and I'm joined with Joe748 and our guest today, Plazity. Plazity, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. Joe748, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I need a beard trim, but I might do that later today.
So yeah, what made you interested in blackjack and card counting?
Yeah, so I'll start from the beginning. So originally, this was a long time ago, like in middle school and high school, I was really into magic tricks, especially like card magic. And I never did it professionally or anything, but just like in front of friends and stuff. And I watched a lot of YouTube. And then like a recommended video popped up on, it was a Blackjack Apprenticeship for card counting. I guess there's maybe some overlap. And then I think it was a long time ago, like when you didn't even show your face, it was just like Ben on camera explaining, you know, high, low and basic strategy. And so just for fun, I was like, this was before I was 18. I just learned basic strategy and learned how to do the running count, but that's as far as I took it because, you know, it was just for fun. And then I just always had that on the back burner. I never really touched it again. And then I'll fast forward. I went, you know, to college, I studied accounting, and then I got, I became a CPA, and then I got a job at a big accounting firm. I liked it, but what happened was basically, you know, we have busy times of the year where you work really long hours, and, you know, it, during that period, it's not really that much fun working those long hours, and so some of my peers and coworkers, we just like joke around like, yeah, you know, this like, you know, this January, February, March really sucks. And then I was at a training with all of them. We were just sort of commiserating over that a little bit. And then they were like, and they knew I did magic tricks. I think I did magic tricks for them like when I first met them. And then they said like, oh, Plaza, you should like move to Vegas and count cards. I was like, huh. I remember like a long time ago, I saw a video about that. Is that even possible today? And then, you know, I just started, saw your videos and just went down a rabbit hole from there. And just basically started training a lot. So I think it was like every morning before work for an hour, I do some sort of a drill. And, you know, just really, I was all into card counting. And I just want to maybe do it full time one day, but I wanted to see about that. So I mean, that's how initially I got introduced to it.
So you got interested, you started training. How did you train?
I did a lot of things. I did the Blackjack Apprenticeship app, and I also did a lot of just real train, like, you know, got a real deck of cards, real felt, real chips, and I just sort of deal to myself and, you know, check the running count. Thumb through the cards afterward. I think a lot of people did. I also played like background slot music or, you know, ambient noise. A bunch of like deck estimation drills, dividing drills for true count conversion. It's just everything. I just, on a certain day, I just pick something to drill. And eventually I would put it all together, do all those things at the same time.
And what was kind of the next step for you then?
But I didn't want to like risk it all and like quit my job. So what I do with my work is actually I asked for a sabbatical, like a 6-month sabbatical. And eventually they gave it to me. So that was pretty cool. And this was sort of the idea of like, what would it be like if I went full time? And so that sort of, and I was playing really low stakes at the time. And also I was trying to build up a bankroll. So I worked for another year, like 2.5, I think it was like almost 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
At my job, it's just to build enough of a bankroll to like maybe like have a shot at like doing this full time. So after that, then I eventually met you, went all the way up to Seattle to start this journey of 6 months.
And refresh my memory, how did your test out go?
Well, I didn't ace it. I think I made a few mistakes, but I think I remember you telling me at the very end of it, okay, I think you have a winning game, But you still have a few mistakes to iron out. And I think I remember what the mistakes were. I think I did a deviation wrong, 16 versus a 9. I think I hit it when I was supposed to surrender. I remember that very well. And then I think I bought insurance at the wrong time. But I think that was about it. And so I sort of, you know, just kept practicing even more after that.
What made you want to do this so bad? Because you were driving 5 hours one way just to practice. Like, where did this energy come from that you wanted to pursue this so much?
Well, maybe the idea of doing it full time. I just, hearing the stories, it sounded like this would be a really cool lifestyle. So I just felt like it'd be a lot of fun. I love to travel. Yeah, just the whole idea enticed me. It sounds super exciting. Yeah, so that's why.
How much did you hate your job on a scale of 1 to 10?
You know, I didn't hate it. Maybe 5. There are a lot of good parts of the job. And then there's the only real part I hated was just the long hours. Like, I just, and that what appeals to me about card counting is the freedom. So obviously choosing your own hours, that was a big appeal. So, but I always warn people, don't try to do this full time because you hate your job. Do it maybe because you love AP or you really like AP. So I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah. I think there can be a romanticizing of, I think I had those same thoughts. Like, you know, I'm going to be in this sexy high limits room and, you know, just take money from them and, you know, they're going to treat me like a king and yeah, I'll get it back off here and there, but it's a different kind of grind.
Absolutely. It's a grind and there's some low points also. It's not perfect all the time.
When you met with me, was that the beginning of your 6-month sabbatical?
That's right. And so that was the beginning of it. Yeah.
What was your bankroll size then?
I was playing I raised the stakes a little bit beyond red shipping. I think I was pretending like I had my bankrolls around 15,000. I think I was going 2 by 150, maybe a little off on that. But then once this is after our test out, and then I could bet a little more, but I just didn't do it yet. And so maybe after about a month, then I increased the stakes to like my full potential of what I had. So I think I had 25K. I think I was going 2 by 200 or maybe 2 by 250. And I had about 3 months of expenses. So I was like, okay, full steam ahead. I'm going to go for it. That's why I decided. That's what I went with.
And what happened?
You know, it's been a wild ride. So I had initial good variance. And then I had a downswing. And I think this is almost the end of my 6-month sabbatical where I had to like return to work. And I had sort of a decision to make. Is like, I did like the lifestyle a lot. I did. And I was like a fun part of the country also. So I enjoyed sightseeing and I liked it a lot. I was under EV a lot, but I still was positive. So I thought to myself, well, you know, after, I think I was at like 200 hours or so. No, I was a lot more probably. I have to look. It was 6 months. It was a lot more than that, but I was still positive. It was like a lot of other gamblers would be negative. I must be doing something a little bit right. And, you know, I do the test outs on the app. So I just sort of believed in what I was doing and I was just doing all the right steps. And so I just sort of left my job and kept going.
So the end of the sabbatical, you said, actually, I'm not coming back.
Yeah. I mean, that was always the plan. It sounds bad, but it's just sort of that safety net, you know, if things go really bad, I can always go back to it. So that's right. That's what I did.
When you quit that full-time job, how much were you up at that point in your blackjack winnings?
Not a lot. I think it was around 10,000.
But so, I mean, yeah.
It's all relative. It's all relative.
Did you just have confidence that you were going to make more eventually, or you were just...
Yeah, I wasn't confident, but I think I would have, you know, more likely than not, I would have. And I thought to myself, I was in a stable industry also. Worst case, I get another job. You know, I have to do several interviews, but I knew I could do it. I still had a backup plan, you know, so I was more confident than not that it would work out. That's the way I thought about it.
So at that point, You said you had 3 months of living expenses, but this was 6 months off.
Yeah. So I think what I did is I did size down a little bit and I did reinvest some of my winnings into this, my expenses. So it was dwindling for sure, but I still had a plan, basically. I think I had a lower bet spread. I went back to 2x200. And so I did make it work out.
And what size bankroll were you playing off of then when you quit the job?
Probably around 20.
Okay.
Yeah, and I did get some money from work as well, like some bonuses. I think they forgot to take me off of payroll. So that helped a little bit. Oh, no. I didn't say anything though. it was reduced for sure, but I still got some compensation, which was nice, which was not part of like the leave of absence agreement.
Yeah. So you're probably generating around 50 to 100 an hour then in that.
That sounds about right. Range. Yeah. Maybe a little under 100 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And the thought was, okay, I'm going to play enough hours that I can both grow the bankroll and cover living expenses. And
yes,
did that for another 6 months and then a pandemic hit.
Yeah, I did. So that, I think that timeline's about right. I went on a pretty good run actually. And up until March, 2020, I think my winnings were, I think around 60,000.
Oh, wow.
So I think I went on a really good run and I sized up. So I didn't really mind it so much. Yeah. I left on a high note.
Yeah.
So that helps your morale for sure.
Yeah. So you won about 10,000 a month for 6 months and then everything shut down. Did you head back out on the road right away or did you take some time before playing again when things started opening up?
I pretty much went right back on the road. So
what was your approach? Like, how much would you play? How much would you take off? Or were you just full-time like road warrior, just go until you're tired?
I think I'm not as aggressive as some people. I do like take maybe a day off or so every once a week. I don't do marathon. Actually, at that time, I didn't do marathon sessions. I think only later in my career, I started realizing that, hey, if the casino is letting me play, I just need to stay, you know, and get as many hours as I can. I think then it would be like, okay, like I play for a few hours, take a lunch break, go back at it for a few hours, call it a night. So not as super intense as some people. That's changed since then.
And did you feel like there was a difference as far as tolerance in casinos right after they reopened? Or not measurably?
I can't really measurably say so. Also, the South was pretty sweaty in general. But I did get some time in, more than I thought at some places. Really hard to say, actually.
Speaking of those marathon sessions, do you remember like where's the longest someone's let you play for continuously?
Like in a day or like how much the casinos let me play, like overall?
Maybe over several days or...
If a casino is letting me play, I think I usually do 4 days. And something that I found is like, you know, by the fifth day, it just kind of looks weird that you're there again. It's like this here again, like, don't you have something to do? So if a casino is letting me play, I hit it hard. That's just my strategy. Take a break or do something else and come back maybe a few days later. So that's my approach if a casino lets me play, which is personally what I do.
Do you primarily drive places or do you fly and get a rental car?
Primarily drive. So I think it's just a huge help. So you're saving on the rental car, you're saving on the flight. So I drive everywhere. I do fly when like special situations where you want to be somewhere at a moment's notice or anything like that. It has happened a handful of times where it's like, if you want this to happen, you have to fly over there. So mostly driving.
Do you feel like that's been a problem with license plate readers?
Maybe, but I do a lot of parking off property. Okay. At a lot of you know, very strange walks on the highway to get to where you're going. Yeah, I've done more and more, like, especially now. I wish I did that more early on, but now if I can do it, I do it, or I just find a way for them to avoid me with my license plate.
Cheap Uber, you know.
I've done that, yes.
Less than can be less than a tip, you know.
Exactly. It's all, yeah, would you pay like $15 for, you know, to get a few hours here for sure.
What's your approach like if you're in a certain city or something, and let's say there's like 10 casinos and you've already been backed off like 3 or 4, will you just go to the remaining 6, or is there any point where you just give up? You're like, they're just flying way too much, I'm just going to keep driving.
It's both. So I think just from asking around, I'll get a sense what people's experience was. Sometimes I will play it all out. Sometimes I won't. I'll leave town. So it's always a hard decision to make. I'm not totally like brute force play every single thing. It's sort of in the middle. I'll do both. It's always a hard decision. Like people say, yeah, they fly, or some people say, well, in my experience, it didn't happen to me. It's kind of a toss up.
And you said that, you know, you started off winning right away and then you went through a pretty discouraging downswing. Have you had any other big break-even streaks or losing streaks?
No. So I think, well, yes. I mean, so I had a break-even streak. I think it was, you know, from all-time high to all-time high, it was about 300 hours. And those were the two biggest things. I had a pretty bad losing streak, made it back. And then I think I told you I made it 60K. And then I had right after that, like a 300-hour break-even. And then pretty much the rest of my career, it's actually been a steady increase, like no major, I'm pretty fortunate, no major losing or break even. It's just kind of I have big winning and losing sessions, but if you look on the graph, it's kind of smooth.
How many hours total is that you're talking about here?
So for straight counting, I just looked at about 1500, like with table time on other things and stuff like that, it's been around 2000. A little over 2000.
Interesting. Yeah. So about 500 hours a year.
Yeah. I definitely played a lot more early on, but I think now I'm also doing other stuff. And so my hours, they're not as much as they used to be, but I'm still like working pretty hard and doing things. But yeah, I think if you average it out, it'll be 500 a year.
Yeah. So when you're on the road, you know, continuously for a long time, what's your approach to eating?
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of this. I think I have like the optimal AP way to eat on the road, I think. So I guess when you're eating on the road, you want to balance like quality, how fast it is and how cheap it is. I'm all about efficiency. Like when you're in the beginning, you know, I eat out three meals a day, and that a couple of things that just kind of, it can be kind of expensive and you're taking time out of your day to go eat. And also with eating three meals a day, like I mentioned earlier, sometimes I take a lunch break, and sometimes like if you're at a casino and leave, you know, they're still evaluating you while you're eating or something. And, you know, it will happen a few times. I come back and they say, sorry, we evaluated you. You can no longer play here, you know? So I'm kind of have the mindset now, like, I'm not going to leave until they make me leave, you know? So I say, okay, let's do it two meals a day. I eat right before I go. I eat when I'm done. And so I think another tip I got from an AP was buffets. I mean, casino buffets, but just like also buffets in general. So I found I eat a lot of Golden Corral. And so I think during lunch, they have like all you eat buffet for like $10 in most major cities. So I found that to be pretty good. I eat a huge meal, have your big meal at lunch. And then you can also eat pretty healthy there. Maybe it's not the highest quality food, but I mean, you can switch it up and you can eat a lot of food and you can eat pretty healthy. They have veggies, protein, rice, sweet potatoes. And the evening, what I'll do is, a lot of times late at night, there's not really healthy options. You know, there's like a McDonald's or Taco Bell or a gas station. And so I'll just do groceries, like non-perishables. So I found what works for me is like, what fruits and vegetables stay good unrefrigerated. So I do a lot of apples, peppers. Also, I do a lot of canned food. So like, you can do canned chicken, mm-hmm. canned fish, get some canned veggies, mix it up, put it in the microwave, throw some seasoning on it. It's not, you know, it's not terrible. And what else? Yeah, there's different things you can do. Soup. I do like camping meals sometimes, like the freeze-dried food. So it also saves time too. Like, I don't have to, like, after my session, go find somewhere to eat, go to the hotel. It's just like, I can go straight to the hotel and whip out my food, and, you know, it's ready pretty quickly. And it's cheap. So that's been my approach.
Are you paying for hotels everywhere? Or are you getting any comps along the way?
Not as much as anymore. Nowadays, pretty much exclusively, I pay for my hotels. And I do say, I think something I learned, I use a lot of the apps like Priceline, Hotwire, where they have the mystery deals. So I do a lot of the mystery deals where you get, you know, you don't know what hotel you're going to get, but you get a reduced rate. And a lot of times you can figure out what the hotel is if you just like look at the pictures, look on Google Maps, and sort of like narrow it down what you're getting. Because sometimes, you know, it could be a surprise.
And most hotels have a microwave. So it seems like you're staying away from the fried foods and the desserts. And
I try. But I splurge every once in a while. But yeah, I think it's huge. Yeah, not to... It could definitely like affect the way you think and get your energy really low if you eat badly.
Yeah, no kidding. And sleep. I just read this thing about like they're now treating sleep on a similar level to like blood pressure and some other major things as far as like what can be tied to cancer. They're discovering how important sleep is. And I know that's tough for an AP. You know, like sleep weird hours, but if nothing else, to like people listening, hopefully say, hey, there's a value to making sure I'm getting sleep, not trying to live off of, you know, 3 hours of sleep a night, or at least, you know, recover well after a trip, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely do that. I do sleep in a lot. It's important, which is one perk of this. Yeah, you have the freedom to do that. So it's great.
What's like your typical daily routine? Like when you wake, like what time do you wake up, and then kind of how does the day progress from there?
Yeah. So, you know, before checkout, I'll wake up an hour before, have some of the hotel coffee packets. I'll do that. And then always what I do also is I go to the gym pretty much every day. Right after I check out or get up in the morning, I try to just get it out of the way. I guess a lot of people, APs, use Planet Fitness. I use Anytime Fitness. Mm-hmm. They're a bit more expensive, but I think there's slightly more of them in the US. So it's like a slightly better shot of getting one close to you. I do that. Then I usually head over to the local Golden Corral, have my huge buffet. And then, you know, I worked out, had my big meal. I mean, I'm ready for... I do that, like, I'm ready for any potential long session, you know. Basically, if I play anywhere, I'm going to be like, okay, I can afford to sit here, or I can spend my whole day here if needed and spend long hours here. I don't like the idea of, like, oh, I can only play for a few hours and then I have to go do this other thing. So I like to, you know, be full, have my workout in, and then I'll just drive to the casino. Whether it's if I have to drive to another town or it's in the same town. And I'll just play as long as I can, basically. And then whenever I'm done, just go back to the hotel. That's sort of my standard day usually.
And you're 4 years in. How do you feel about it now compared to when you got started?
Well, I think there's definitely a lot more excitement early on. It's kind of like, this is all brand new. This freedom's like so great. I'm, you know, it's all fresh. And, also with smaller stakes, you know, you're not literally fighting for your life, but every session feels like, wow, I just won this amount. Like, this is huge. I can grow my bankroll by this much. Maybe nowadays, if I have a big winning or losing session, it's like, well, that's great. But my life's still the same. Like, I'm still going to do my same daily routine the next day. I'm still going to watch my Netflix show. I'm still going to go to the Golden Corral. I'm still going to do all that. So, but I still like it. So the initial excitement's kind of gone, but I still love it. And I still feel good about it. I don't want to be a road warrior forever, though. Definitely. Eventually, I want to settle down and just maybe take trips on the side or have like an apartment or house. And then if I feel like I'm in a good enough spot with my bankroll, I'd, you know, rent a car and take flights.
So what are some of the bigger challenges that you face right now being a full-time AP?
I thought about this. I may have an answer maybe most people don't think about is probably decision fatigue. Like, a lot of times as a full-time AP, you have a lot of decisions to make. Like, you can just take counting as an example. Just, okay, you have this information about this casino. What should my bet spread be? Like, do people say they flyer? What casinos do they flyer to? And like you mentioned earlier, oh, I've been backed off from this property. What do I do now? And it's not always the right answer. And, you know, what markets to play. You can think of a lot of examples. I feel like I just make so many decisions every day. And that can be a great thing. I do like it. But then, you know, sometimes you have a lot of decisions to make and can add up.
Man, that's such a good point. Like, advantage play is so much more than the time at the table. You know, obviously you got to like get that skill down, but that's just to like, you know, be able to play the game. I play very little blackjack. I mean, casinos very little at this point, but I played in Vegas like a month ago, and it was like, you know, I'll do this like once or twice a year, get out there and play. And it brings back all those thoughts. Like, should I play here? Or conditions aren't that great. Should I go to this other place? Then you go to the other place and it's like, conditions are good, but did they recognize me? Or, you know, just a million things. Should I park here or there? And should I play now or later? And, you know, 5 million things that you're constantly evaluating while doing the job.
Exactly. And yeah, like the penetration changes. And it's like, okay, should I keep playing? Is it worth it? Am I feeling good? You know, all these things.
You know, I was thinking when you were talking about those long break, 300-hour break-even streak, and early on, you can get kind of obsessed, or I see this with people getting obsessed with the next all-time high. And I'm always thinking about Stanford Wong. I can't remember if it's 1.3, 1.7% of the time. You're only at your all-time high like 1% of the time, roughly. And so you spend 99% of the time like obsessing about getting back to that 1%. And I think that, you know, maybe I was a little bit fortunate that when I was playing, it was all about the bankroll. Like, we're on this bankroll. And so it's not like, when are we going to be at a specific all-time high, but where are we at in this 1, 2, 3 month chunk of time? And it's a different kind of obsessing. But man, if you spend all your energy just obsessed with that next all-time high, you're going to be frustrated 99% of the time, rather than saying like, okay, yeah, you can be happy, sad about an individual session. But I think when you get further into it, yeah, the goal is to reach new all-time highs, but you're not as singularly focused on that 1%. Would you say that now, 4 years in?
Yeah, you could drive yourself crazy. Yeah, focus on it. Or, you know, also, you know, your happiness level is determined by how big your bankroll is. I try to separate myself from it, but sometimes you have human nature where you still kind of think about it. It's not your all-time high very often. So
I don't know. I like, what do you guys think would be a better way for people to think about it? I was thinking maybe when you reach an all-time high, for this is for the solo player that's not playing on a team, be like, okay, that's the end of a quote unquote bankroll. Maybe go out to somewhere fancier than Golden Corral to celebrate. And then say, all right, it's going to be 100-300 hours till, like, that's what I'm emotionally prepared for before the next one. If it happens in one session, great. But to say, all right, reach that milestone. Now it's back to work for a couple 100 hours before I'm expecting that next all-time high. I don't know what, Joe 748, you've played a crap ton of blackjack. What do you think is a, how did you think about that? Because I see people on our forum or whatever lamenting, I reached my all-time high and then it went straight down. You know, how did you think about this stuff?
I think I didn't focus on the actual all-time high number as much or getting back to, well, it was more like I want to outpace the N0 or some unforeseen losing streak or break-even streak. It's like, I just want to get back, like, yeah, I'll maybe like take a day or half a day to like enjoy, oh wow, it feels nice to be back at this all-time high. But then out right after that, next morning, I'm just like, I got to play more hours and get ahead of the curve here. You know, it's less about getting back to that high, I think, but just more about grinding out the hours. And
I think so, yeah. I always did have like a milestone. I think initially it was like every 10K increment of your all-time high. It's like, I think you're right, like calling it, yeah, it could take another 200, 100, 300 hours potentially to get back to make your next milestone. And I think I did always acknowledge every milestone, like, hey, this feels good. But, you know, and also I view everything as, so you can almost view it as predetermined. Like, oh, I have to get through this break even or losing streak. It's going to happen. I just have to, I want to get it over with as fast as possible.
Yeah.
To reach the next milestone. It's just like, it will happen and I just have to do it.
So one of the interesting things you've done is some credit card churning, to help with your travel expenses. Can you tell us about that experiment, how it went, what you did?
Yeah, I definitely, don't do it anymore. I did it early on. I think I just got a few, I think three credit cards and just did their sign up bonus. And it was the Chase, I think they called it the Chase Trifecta, where there's three credit cards, travel credit cards, and you know, really reduces your or increases your cash back value. You can redeem it on travel, but during COVID, which was great, people weren't flying. And so you could redeem all your points for food. And, you know, I was eating out a crap ton. So basically how it works, I don't know if I can explain it. With the Chase system, you get, like, say, with this credit card, you get 3% cash back. Or you can get a 1.5x boost. So that would be 3 times 1.5 is 4.5% redeemed for flights. But because of COVID, you could redeem it for food. So you're getting, like, extra cash back for food. And I always maximize it every single month, basically. And this lasted all the way, I think, up until beginning of this year, I think. They stopped it finally and said, okay, you have to use it for flights. You can't use this boost for food anymore. And I think their sign-up bonus, the Chase Sapphire, I was like, I think it was, I got it at their best moment. It was like $1,000. And then these two other cars, the Chase Freedom and the Chase Freedom Unlimited, I believe each one of them is around $200. And I always met the spending requirement because you're spending a crap ton on travel. So I guess you're an AP, you can pretty, if you're especially a full-time traveling AP, you can always, no problem getting the spending requirement. I am flying a lot more now. I am able to redeem the points. You might be flying a lot, and so you can always get that boost in value. So I think it's pretty good for APs. I sort of slow down because I'm away from home a lot, and then they mail the card to you, and it's just kind of a hassle. I have to like figure out a way to get the card, to get the card number, and but early on, it definitely helped a lot. I don't know if you're able to follow all that.
Yeah. I'm not like huge into the credit card game, but I definitely, you know, back in the day, we do sign up bonus stuff, and I still do. And then I do the Amex Platinum, and you know, I have quite a bit of business spending, and so I use the points for gift cards, like Home Depot. I'm always gonna, you know, be able to spend something. There's a few places you get like really good return for it, and then every year I'm supposed to get charged for the credit card, but I just tell them, hey, I'm gonna cancel it. I figured out you can do it through chat now. Like I don't have to talk to a person. I can just do the chat thing and be like, hey, I'm gonna cancel. And then they're like, oh, if you keep it, you know, basically we're gonna give you so many points that the card's free. So I'm not hustling.
Yeah, I'm not hustling like some people.
But I'm still, you know, an NAP with my credit card game.
Yeah, you know, if I see a really enticing offer, maybe I'll do it. I did do the gift card thing. I think one of the gift cards, a lot of the credit cards have rotating quarters. And there'll be like a $500 max, like at Amazon or Walmart. And you just buy a $500 Walmart gift card. So you have to keep track of it, though, and make sure you use it all. So definitely an AP.
I knew someone that we have a grocery store chain up here that always has gas stations connected to them. And based on your spending, you get, you know, like more, you can get up to like $1 off a gallon if you spend enough. And so they were buying gift cards to max out the gas money because they had an RV. So they're getting $1 off a gallon wherever, because they would just max out these Amazon gift cards that they're going to spend, you know, buy stuff with anyway. I was like, oh, that's a creative move. I haven't done it, but I should probably look into it, try to get that $1 off a gallon. I mean, I don't drive as much as full-time APs anymore, but have you had any legal issues during your career?
No, actually haven't. The only thing I've had, I think I've had one back room, and I think I sort of, I mean, I like whatever you guys think. I mean, I think it was really hard to get out of. It was tribal, and I had over 10,000 in chips, and they said, at first I tried to leave. Like I actually got approached. My back office was from tribal police. They tapped me on the shoulder. They said, we need to see your ID. And I said, no, I don't have it. And then I think I started walking out. And they said, well, if you leave right now, you can never come back. And so I was like, okay, they're 86ing me now. And I really don't have, and this is a really remote part of the country. I don't know anyone who would cash out my chips for me. And, you know, I really felt in a bind. So I didn't really want to go through the big headache of fighting this. And I just did it. You know, it's like, hey, here's my ID. You know, you can take a picture of me. Yeah. And then there's I just did it. Yeah. They cashed me out and I was over. It was done with.
Yeah. It's those remote places. You just got to suck it up, get the money, you know?
But you said you were back roomed or?
Yeah, they said you have, in order to cash you out, where you're going to have to go with us to this room.
Yeah, that's a little scary solo, like, you know.
Yeah, I knew they weren't going to, like, beat me up or anything, but, I mean, all it was, they took a picture of me. I pretty much had to do what they wanted to do.
I had a situation like that, too, where they took me in the back room and they wanted to get a picture of me. So they're like, you have to look up at that camera. And that I kept like making all these crazy faces and I wouldn't have my face straight. I would just like deform my face and squint and go back and they the whole entire time. And they still let me cash out. After
that. Oh, that's good. I really thought about that, but I was like, they're going to get even more upset with me if I try that. I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like cross your eyes. Oh, weird smile.
Man, I want to see the videos.
Yeah. Hopefully we get it one day.
Oh, man. So what about relationships? You know, being on the road so much, how do you, you know, stay connected with people and all that?
I would say for me, actually, I don't really mind the alone time. I was kind of an introvert. But I think everyone still needs that human connection. So, I mean, it happens to me, get a little lonely on the road. So I mean, your network is huge. Meeting up with people, other APs, you know, or family and friends in certain areas of the US that do that a lot. That always helps. And I did have a girlfriend who was with me and would go on trips with me a lot. That always helps. And that's really hard to find. So it's manageable, you know. If you have a good network and you don't really mind a lot of alone time on the road, that worked for me. So that's how I deal with it.
Did she work remotely, or how is she able to travel with you? Okay.
Remote, yeah. She worked.
So 4 years in, what advice do you wish you would have had before starting this endeavor, this career?
The advice I'd give is to be realistic about the number of hours you're going to get going full time. Not only how, you know, tolerant a casino is and how much you're physically able to get in, but also how much you emotionally, you know, want to do it. And, you know, sometimes you can go crazy. Like if you sit at a table for 7 days a week for, you know, 8 hours or more. And I wish I would have known that to figure out, like, get a better gauge of how much EV I generate, you know, per week, per month, and get a better idea how much money I'd make. Because, you know, I thought in the beginning, like, oh, I'll just, you know, I can move to Vegas and get, you know, 40 hours a week, no problem, and just chill out, you know?
Yeah.
What is more closer to reality, like weekly hours you can expect?
In the beginning, I think I was doing like what worked for me in terms of like how much I enjoyed it and like could pull off. I like maybe 80 hours a month. But nowadays it's can be a lot less than that. Maybe in terms of tolerance, you know, being lucky and finding a casino that you play for long hours. So it's much more variable now. But, you know, playing higher stakes. I don't know. Maybe I might sound bad, but maybe, you know, you only get like 10 hours in a week and or less than that. So I think you should maybe be realistic and always under budget. I always do it too, like under budget how many hours you're going to get or the quality of the game you're going to get to figure out how much money you're going to make over the year or the month.
Yeah, like when you say 10 hours a week, are you doing two by, like how much is your top bet right now? Or when you're getting 10 hours a week? Okay.
Maybe I go two by 1,000 now.
A lot better EV than when you're going to 2 by 150.
So, yeah, I think I ran the numbers. Technically, I could, you know, I've been sizing up pretty quickly now. I've been getting good variance and like a steady increase. I could go, I think, 2 by 1,500 if I wanted to, but.
What's like your hourly you think you're getting going 2 by 1,000?
I think minimum I can expect me like 200 an hour, but of course they could go. I think with a great game, if you go to like a really good game, 1,000 an hour. But oftentimes those places maybe won't let me play that long. So realistically, maybe 200, 300
and
an
like
hour.
If you're going, game. If you're going 2 by 1,000, like what kind of swings are you seeing? Like high and low, like the most?
It's the swings I'm getting are roughly like 20,000. So I think I feel bad. I never had a $20,000 session. I had a $19,995 session though. And then I think I've lost 19,000 at one point. just so barely on the precipice of 20. Those are the kind of swings you get.
Any stories you want to share with us?
Yeah, I have a few. I thought, you know, a lot of times these stories are all a blur and I kind of forget them, but I look through my results and like try to think of like anything unique happened during this session. So you have a few of them I could share. The first one actually isn't related to counting. I was doing something else in the casino, but I was on a 6-to-5 blackjack game doing something else. And, I think it's pretty cool. So what happened was, we were playing and there was going to be a dealer rotation. So this new dealer, I think, was new or just took like a big leave of absence. And the outgoing dealer told her, okay, this is a 6-to-5 blackjack game. Remember, it's 6-to-5. Okay. It's like, it's 6-to-5. She's like, okay, I got it. 6-to-5. And then she comes in, you know, the outgoing dealer leaves and she starts dealing. And then it wasn't blackjacks that got paid 6 to 5. It was any winning hand got paid 6 to 5.
Oh my gosh.
So if you put like a $100 bet out, yeah. So, you know, if I have a $100 bet out, I get paid 120. So I was like, oh my God. And like, this can't last for long. So a couple things happened. So I was like, hey, what do I do here? It's like another decision to make. Okay. Let's flat bet 2 by 75 so they don't call black action. Okay. I was like, okay, that's my plan. And I was going, and then it was going good. Like, it was a few rounds, everything was going good. And I think one of the ploppies, one of the players, was about to speak up and say something. I said, I think I gave her a look like, you know, don't, like, no, don't, just like verbal, didn't say anything. And she got the hint. And then what happened is, I think I doubled down or something. And then the woman had to pay me in black. The dealer paid me in black. Mm-hmm. They said black out. And then the pit boss came over. I was like, oh no, this is over. And the pit boss comes over, looks at it. It's like, yeah, looks good to me. So that was paid out 6 to 5. So I was like, wow, this is like, maybe I should increase it. Like, you know, maybe go 2 by 200. So I was like, hey, betting 2 by 200. And occasionally the pit boss would come and verify, and it's like, looks good. And then I was like, okay, the table max here is 500. Let's just slap that 2 by 500. And then that was going good. Everything was going good. And then I think they're on 20-minute rotations. And then the next dealer comes in, and then she was looking from behind, you know, about to tap her on the shoulder. And she like made a weird look, like when she was paying out 6 to 5 on regular hands. And then, you know, and then she said, what are you doing? She's like, this table 6 to 5. It's like, no, that's
did
only
you just
for black
grab your
jacks.
Chips and leave or what?
So then what happened is the pit boss came over. Like, he heard this commotion. He's like, you've been paying 6 to 5 on any winning hand this whole time? It's like, yeah. It was like, and then I think then, so I said, like, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Like, nothing happened. Like, you know, it's what it was. And they didn't take our money back or anything like that. I guess because the hands already took place.
Oh my gosh.
They decided not to do anything. So, and then this lasted about 20 minutes. And that was that. Yeah. One other story. It was a back off, and it was during right when the casinos opened back up, where it was like maybe 2 or 3 people per table, and there's often a wait for a table. And what happened was, it was in the South, just when stuff opened up. So it was really, you know, sometimes hard to get a seat, and a lot of people, there's competition to get a seat. And I played at a casino with one other person, and he saw me get backed off. And then I went to another casino. This was a few days later, and it was me and another player playing. So there's 2 seats and they were taken. And there was a line behind us. And the next person in line was the person who saw me get backed off the previous casino. And then I'm pretty sure I didn't hear the full conversation, but he went over to the pit boss. And I heard the words, counting. I think that's what I heard, counting. I heard him say that. So I figured maybe what I told him is that I got backed off another casino. Why are you letting him play? And then I think it's probably him what did it. Then about 10 minutes later, I got backed off. So like, he caused the back off is what I'm putting together.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If, you know, any way to get play. That seat at that table so he can lose his money.
Yeah. So are you still full time, or what's the future hold for you?
Yeah, still full time. I'm going to hit the road here again shortly. You know, I'm pretty proud of it. I think I have played pretty much every market in the U.S., you know, every state, exception of one or two. But, and so I think right now I have played properties 2 or 3 times before, but not that much. So I'm pretty much going to start my recycle of the U.S. here and go back to some places I haven't been into in years. So I'm excited about that, but like I said before, not don't want to be a road warrior forever, but for now it's fine.
Still hope to settle down, find kind of like community or whatever, like a local place to be settled, and then go on trips here and there, but not going to stay on the road for do you have like a deadline, or just kind of going to go by how you're feeling?
No deadline. I think, well, partially how I'm feeling, and also like, I have like a number, like a net worth number or a bankroll size number, where it's like, okay, I can expect this like huge, this increase in expenses. I can generate this much EV. So I have just like a number where it's like, okay, I could really feel really comfortable and not really worry at all about paying rent and buying flights and rental cars and still generate some good EV to outpace that. So it's a hard number I have.
When you're going 2x1,000, you're betting pretty, your swings are pretty huge. How are you avoiding showing your ID at all these places?
You know, I think this common sense stuff, I mean, sometimes you have to with the CTR. I mean, that's usually what does it. I don't know if I'll just give away everything, but, you know, like parking off property, maybe avoiding the main entrance. I'll give a tip. I mean, it might be common stuff, and just common sense, and people do it, is if there's multiple entrances, you maybe use the hotel side entrance to make it look like maybe you're staying there and you've walked in there a million times, and you're just, you know, just avoiding the ID check as best as you can. Sometimes it's unavoidable and they're really strict. So the way I look at it is there's variance with showing your ID. You lay the groundwork for doing the best you can not to show it, but every now and then you're just gonna have to show it. So I try not to stress out too much. I just do everything I can not to. If I have to, I have to. So it does happen.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking some time to share your journey from coming across a YouTube video. How long ago was that? 10 years ago?
I think I looked, I think 2008, around 21, the movie.
So 15 years ago, you get suggested some YouTube video, and then took you a decade to take a next step, but now you've been full-time 4 years. So thanks for sharing your story. Golden Corral, pro tip, 2 big meals a day.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And yeah. And, you both inspired me, and
well, thanks for paying it forward other APs. Have a good rest of your day.
See ya.
All right. See you guys.
You too. Thanks.